God is still on the throne, and prayer changes things. This is Brother Hutchings inviting the listeners to another Watchman on the Wall program of Southwest Radio Ministries. And here now is Brother Jerry.
On today's broadcast, Dr. Bob Glaze and Bill Snebelin share more information on Freemasonry. Brother Bill has written a book and produced a DVD presentation about the subject, and they are the basis for the program. Bill's varied background includes a stint in the Masons. Unfortunately, many who are in the Masons aren't fully aware of what's really involved, and that's one of the reasons we bring you programs on Freemasonry. Here's Dr. Glaze and his guest, Bill Snebelin.
Thank you, Brother Jerry. Bill, it's good to have you back today.
Well, praise the Lord. It's great to be here.
It's always a pleasure to do programs with you. It's always good to have somebody who knows a lot about the subject, you know. I could just almost say, hello, Bill, bye, Bill, and you'd fill up the space. But we're going to discuss some different parts of your DVD today, very important things, so people will have an idea exactly of what we're talking about in this DVD as well as the book. They're both very, very important. And it's an important subject today because I don't believe most people realize what a part this subject has in their everyday lives, in politics, in religion, in economics. All of these are involved with Freemasonry. So, Bill, let's just get started here and go down the line. We didn't get very far yesterday, but that's okay. You gave us a lot of great information, some very practical information. The second part of your DVD is called Beware of the Leaven. Tell us about that.
Well, essentially, the whole idea, and we need to understand, first of all, that leaven is a symbol in the Bible of wickedness, of sin. And the problem is that down through the centuries, the devil has figured out various ways of introducing leaven into the church. And I believe the scriptural passage where our Lord talks about, you know, the woman who took leaven and she had three things of meal, you know, and she put leaven in each one. I think that prophetically refers to the woman putting leaven into the Catholic Church, into the Orthodox Church, which is the Eastern Rite churches, and then into the Protestant churches. And the problem is that especially, you know, talking about the Protestant denominations in America, they have been leavened by this Masonic thing down through the centuries, because Masonry has basically existed as a modern institution since the early 1700s. And it's a brilliant thing because it's packaged as something that appears biblical. So, I mean, obviously if someone came to a church and said, I want to join your church, and they were a flat-out devil worshiper, people would be wise to that. They wouldn't let such a man join the church. But because this stuff is kind of America's civil religion, if you will. You know, I mean, Masonry is just so much a part of the fabric of America that it gets away. It gets into the church. And by getting into the church, again, just like leaven, you know, a little leaven leaveneth the whole lump, like we talked about last time. And so this tiny amount of leaven will start spreading. And it'll be like a contagion. Because I'll tell you, I've had people call us over the years for counseling or whatever, and like they might have, say, for example, gone and asked for prayer because they were sick and had an elder or a deacon or even a pastor lay hands on them and anoint them according to the scriptures, you know, for healing, and discover that man was a Mason. You know, they had a Masonic ring on, because they aren't shy about this, most of them. They're proud of the fact they're Masons. And because of that, this person would be cursed, literally cursed instead of blessed, by having the hands of a Freemason laid on them because of the ungodly headship that's present there. And so this is a very bad thing. And, of course, a Mason in a family, like the father or the grandfather, that creates a trickle-down effect of evil. And we document, I think, both in the video and in the book, how many, many times children get into trouble, either with sin or with illnesses or whatever, because the father is a Freemason or even a grandfather, because the generational sin principle goes four generations, according to Exodus chapter 20, verse 5. So we've had many cases where a young person got into drugs or sexual immorality or whatever, even though he was raised in a supposedly good Christian home, because his dad or his grandfather or even a great-grandfather was a Freemason. So this is dangerous stuff. And again, that's the nature of leaven. It's just that you might think, well, gee, just having some guy like two generations earlier, you know, being the Masons, can that really have an impact? And sadly, the answer is emphatically yes, it can. And it's always detrimental.
So it's almost inherited.
Well, yes. In fact, it's exactly that. You know, the sins of the fathers are visited unto the children, even to the third and fourth generation. That's scripture.
Okay. Well, the leaven, you know, a little leaven leaveneth the whole lump. And so you have to get it all out before you've accomplished anything.
Exactly. Let me say one other thing. That doesn't just include the person himself or herself repenting, because there are women's organizations in the Masons too, like the Eastern Star. But it also means junk, paraphernalia. Like we tell a story probably in both the book and the video of this young boy who had a really serious learning disability. And it turned out that in his bedroom, he had his beloved grandfather's fez, the little red hat, you know, that the Shriners wear. And his grandfather had given it to him on his deathbed. And this kid loved his grandpa, you know, which is all well and good. But I told him, listen, that thing is a cursed object. And it needs to be destroyed. It needs to be burnt by fire and so on. And so the kid was a good young man. And he and his mom went home and they bashed the thing to pieces because it's got, like, jewelry on it, you know, little bangles and whatnot. And it also has, you know, the felt part. And he burned it after he smashed it to bits. And literally within a week, that kid's learning disability vanished.
Wow.
That's the power of the curse of having this leaven in your family line.
Okay. Since we're here, in a couple of minutes, just tell us about the fez, where it came from and what it really means.
Well, of course, most people associate the fez with some kind of Muslim thing, and it's originally from Morocco, and of course there's a city that's called Fez there, F-E-Z, historically. And the story goes, and this is actually told me by a man who used to be a Muslim, that the Muslim armies came across North Africa, you know, doing what Muslim armies do, which is basically saying either become a Muslim or cut your head off. And they came to the city of Fez, and there were like 20,000 Christian men, women, and children in that city. And they conquered the city, and they basically said, okay, either convert to Islam and bow the knee to Allah, or else we're going to kill you. Well, the Christians wouldn't convert, of course. And so they were slain, and blood was running in the streets of all of these thousands of Christians. And, of course, the Muslims, being good Muslims, were wearing turbans. And so to celebrate this great victory, because this is a major city, you know, they took the turbans and dipped them in the blood of the Christian martyrs and put them back on their heads. And that's where the custom came for Moroccan Muslims to this very day. They wear these hats, for lack of a better word, that are kind of the color of blood-stained cloth. They're kind of a dark brownish red. And it's to celebrate this great victory over Christianity. Now, can you imagine a Christian pastor or a Christian elder becoming a Shriner and wearing that hat? I mean, you know, to me, that would just be cursed in and of itself, because it's blasphemy.
Diametrically opposed to what he's supposed to be doing.
Exactly. And then there's the fact that in order to be a Shriner, you know, I don't know if we're getting ahead of ourselves or not, but to be a Shriner, you have to go through all these blood-curdling degrees, which are forbidden in the Bible, oaths and such like. And then to be a Shriner, you have to kneel at an altar and swear on a Quran, not on a Bible, but on the Quran, you know, in the name of Allah, the God of my forefathers. That's the oath, and I took that oath. So can you imagine a Christian pastor kneeling at an altar and swearing an oath on the Quran and saying in the name of Allah, the God of my forefathers? I don't think so.
So the 33rd degree Masons are the fellows who ride around on little motorcycles and wear the red fez.
No, those are the Shriners.
Those are the Shriners. Okay, is that?
Those are two different things.
That's two different things.
The
okay.
33rd degree Masons are a kind of elite bunch, whereas the Shriners, if you have enough money, and you've gone through either the Scottish Rite or the York Rite, you can become a Shriner just by plunking down a few $100.
Okay, why do they wear a red hat like that?
Well, because they think they're emulating the Arabian culture. See, the actual name of the organization is Shriner for short, but they're called the Ancient Arabic Order of the Nobles of the Mystic Shrine. So notice in there the word Arabic. And if you do the rituals and go through all this, you see that all of the lodge officers are dressed like Arab potentates. I mean, they wear turbans and big pantaloons, you know, kind of like you'd see in an old movie about Arabs. And it's all done in that setting. You know, the whole thing is steeped in Arabian Islamic mysticism. The shrine is. In fact, even the shrine building, like the shrine I attended in Milwaukee, was Tripoli Shrine, I think, if I'm remembering right. And it looks like a little Taj Mahal sitting there on Wisconsin Avenue in downtown Milwaukee. And, of course, the Taj Mahal is an Islamic shrine. So they basically are promoting Islam. And this was decades before we had the rise of, you know, fundamentalist Islam and terrorism and all the things that have happened in the last 25 years. But this is not good because Islam is another false religion. And it's a false god. Allah is not the God of the Bible. And you can't have that kind of influence anymore. You can have the influence of Baal worship from the lower degrees.
Okay, some of the shrines, the temples, they have the crescent moon.
Yes.
Give us the implications of that.
Well, see, originally, Allah was a moon god. He was essentially a stone idol that was in this temple that was called the Kaaba in Mecca. And in Islamic legend, and this is probably true, you know, Muhammad was run out of Mecca because of preaching this new gospel of Islam. And he came back with a conquering army from Medina and conquered the city of Mecca, and he walked into this Kaaba, which was a pagan shrine. And there were all these idols from these various tribes of the Arabian area where this was. And he took his staff and knocked over all the idols but one and said, this is the true God. And this is a statue of Allah, and he has a little crescent moon carved on his belly. You can actually see pictures, archaeological pictures of Allah, who's a moon god. So that is why you see many Islamic countries like Turkey and others have a crescent moon in their flags or in their national emblems. And so for the shrine, you have both the crescent moon and this kind of little head that looks like a Egyptian, you know, like Pharaoh, which is another wonderful thing to have if you're a Christian, and then a scimitar. And the scimitar is that curved sword that was developed in Damascus that's unique to the Muslim warriors, and it's what they would use to cut the heads off people. And every shriner, when they wear that fez or the various regalia, they wear these badges that have that symbol on it. And so they're actually walking around, and here, assuming they're a Christian, they're walking around wearing this thing, this scimitar, as part of their regalia, which is a thing that actually symbolizes the instrument that was used to behead tens of thousands of Christians all throughout the Africa and the Middle East.
Okay. We're going to have to skip some of your stuff. They're just going to have to get this video and watch it. But we're going to skip the Mystery Woman, which is a very important chapter. Adam Weisskopf, who was a founder of a lot of this stuff. It's very important that you see this. I want to go directly to Albert Pack. Albert Pack has had more influence on Freemasonry or Masonry, whatever it is, anybody in the United States, I would suppose, in American history. I have read this to Freemasons, and they try to interpret it a different way. And that I have a copy of Albert Pack's Morals and Dogma that he wrote back in, 1860, something like that?
Yeah, right after the Civil War.
Right after the Civil War. Now, he was a colonel or what in the Civil War?
Yeah, he was a general.
A general.
In the Confederate Army.
In the Confederate Army, okay. And under the Grand Pontiff, which is, I don't know what's...
That's the 19th degree of the Scottish Rite.
Okay, the 19th degree. Thank you. It's page 321 of his book, and this book is still available. It said, the apocalypse is, to those who receive the 19th degree, the apotheosis of that sublime faith which aspires to God alone and despises all the pomps and works of Lucifer. Now, this is where it gets a little bit tricky. Lucifer, the light bearer. Okay. Strange and mysterious name to give to the spirit of darkness. Lucifer, the son of the morning, it is he who bears the light. Now, explain that to me, sir.
Well, he's basically saying that Lucifer is the god of light. In another place, he says that in the word he uses, Adonai, which is, of course, one of the Hebrew names for the Almighty, is the god of darkness. And that's in a different quote. But the idea is that most people agree that have studied the corpus of all of Pike's writings, he was basically a Zoroastrian. He believed in a god of light and a god of darkness being equal. He was a dualist. And Zoroastrian religion is called the Farsi religion, and it's one of the religions of Iraq. And anyhow, he believed, therefore, that the God of the Bible, the God of Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob, was the God of darkness, and that Lucifer was the God of light. He called himself a Luciferian. Now, he didn't say he was a Satanist, but to anybody who understands the Bible, they understand Lucifer is just the name of the devil before he fell, you know, due to pride, and the Almighty kicked him out of heaven. So Pike, and this guy, again, like you say, he was one of the most influential Masons of the last 200 years, and he openly promoted the idea of Lucifer worship. And let me just put one other thing onto that, because out of the mouths of two or three witnesses, all things are established. There's another guy who is kind of the 20th century version of Pike, because Pike died at the end of the 19th century. In the 20th century, one of the greatest Masonic philosophers was named Manly Palmer Hall. And he wrote a book called The Lost Secret of Freemasonry, among many others. And this guy was a 33rd degree Mason, very highly honored man. And in that book, and I'm pretty much quoting here, he said, when a master Mason comes to understand his power and becomes a warrior on the block, then the seething energies of Lucifer are his to command, unquote. Don't that sound spiritual, though?
I do. That would seem to give somebody a lot of power.
Yeah, you know, and I mean, but imagine a Christian man, because he's just, pardon me, Manly P. Hall there is talking about just a third-degree Mason.
Okay. Now, that's the Blue Lodge.
Yeah, that's the lowest 3 degrees are the Master Mason, okay. And then the other two.
So anyone who is a Freemason, in essence, is adhering to the dogma of these guys. Is that correct?
Well, yes, because Lucifer preaches universalism. He tells everybody, it don't matter what you are. Never mind that Christ said that, you know, I am the way, the truth, and the life, and no one come unto the Father but went by me. You know, every way is just fine. You know, you can be a Muslim, you can be a Mason, you can be a Jew, you can be a whatever, and it's all just wonderful. That's the gospel of Lucifer. And on top of that, if you to understand, and I think in the video I explore this, the symbolism of the lodge, you know, the phallic worship, the ancient Egyptian mysteries that are contained within the lodge, because the lodge itself boasts that we are an ancient mystery religion. That's what they tell people. They aren't shy about it. But what people don't understand is that ancient mystery religion is basically a sexual cult. And many of the Masonic tombstones you will see in various secular cemeteries around our nation, if the man was wealthy enough to afford it, this Masonic headstone would have a small obelisk.
I've seen it in Egypt, in Turkey, in different places. And so this tradition or this belief or this religion is carried through all of these places, all the way over to here, brought to here by some of these people like Albert Pike and so forth. And so this thing lives on. Now, it evidently is seething under the surface. Now, it seems to be kind of quiet at this point. Before, you never knew who was a Mason, who was not. They had to give you the secret handshake or something like that. But now then, they proudly wear stickers on their cars, emblems on their cars and so forth. So they're totally out in the open with this. where is this leading?
Well, see, it's all part of the one world religion. I mean, this Adam Weishaupt that you mentioned, you know, earlier on, who kind of was, along with Pike, the two most influential people in historically putting Masonry to where it is today, he was a believer in a new world order. And that was back in 1776. Notice that date. So the Illuminati and the Masons together, because the Illuminati are just a higher level of Freemasonry. And I talk about that in the DVD. You have to understand that. And so they want to create a world where religion has become this meaningless pablum of all these different faiths kind of gumbled together, you know. And then, of course, Christianity will be the only one left. And if the Christians don't submit to the Masonic New World Order type ideology, they will be killed. They will be guillotined or have their heads cut off in some other way.
Absolutely. So again, Jerry is going to tell you here in just a moment how to get these two items, Freemasonry, the DVD Freemasonry, Fatal in the First Degree, and also the book Freemasonry Beyond the Light, both written by our guest, Bill Snebelin. And Bill, it's been great to have you on our program as always, and I look forward to having you back at some time in the near future, and God bless you and in your
Absolutely.
Work.
Thank you.
Okay, God bless.
Yeah, you too.
To get Bill Snebelin's DVD and book, call 1-800-652-1144. Write to Southwest Radio Ministries, P.O. Box 100, Bethany, Oklahoma, 73008. Or go online. The internet website address is swrc.com. The two-hour DVD, Freemasonry, Fatal in the First Degree, is offered in appreciation of a $20 contribution if you live in the United States, $25 if you're in Canada. The 288-page book, Masonry, Beyond the Light, will be sent when you send a $15 gift in the U.S., $20 in Canada. Better yet, get the book and the DVD at the same time for a gift of $30 in the U.S., $40 in Canada. In addition to Brother Bill, the DVD features six other speakers who are knowledgeable about the inner workings of Masonry. Bill biblically guides you through the spiritual processes necessary for a person who's already caught up by Masonry's trap to be free from it. In other words, he not only points out the problems, he has a solution. The book, Masonry Beyond the Light, delves into the inside secrets of the cult. Both these resources provide plenty of facts to help you show Masonic friends the truth. Don't miss getting them. The two programs in this series are also available. Get them on a CD for an offering of $14 in the U.S., $15 in Canada. Give us a call at 1-800-652-1144. Write to Southwest Radio, Box 100, Bethany, Oklahoma, 73008. Website address is swrc.com. There are some stations we really do need to hear from in order for us to continue these broadcasts. They are WAVA, Arlington, Virginia, KBXD, Dallas, Texas, and WEMM in West Virginia. Next over most stations is a Bible in the News report. Join Brother Hutchings and Dr. Larry Spargimino tomorrow as they begin a series on helping teens and young adults strengthen their faith. If your children are grown and out of the house, don't forget your grandchildren. Be sure to tune in for your Watchman on the Wall program of Southwest Radio Ministries. It's time for today's Bible in the News report, a feature of your Watchman on the Wall program of Southwest Radio Ministries. Reporting today is Dr. Larry Spargimino. According to Matthew Staver, Brother Larry, founder and chairman of Liberty Council, President Obama is the first sitting president to address Planned Parenthood in person. Mr. Obama showed unqualified support for Planned Parenthood in his address at the organization's national conference in Washington, D.C. While the president has been active demonizing pro-life Americans, He gave his unqualified support to Planned Parenthood when he said, and this is a quote, "You've got a president who's going to be right there with you fighting every step of the way," close quotes.
Well, Jerry, to prove his point, the president's signature achievement, Obamacare, will usher in the biggest advance in abortion services since Roe v. Wade. To add insult to injury, the president has arranged by force of federal law to make pro-life Americans pay for what they believe is morally wrong. In Mr. Obama's 12-minute speech, Planned Parenthood performed 7.6 abortions based on the abortion provider's own statistics. The president concluded his address by saying, and I'm quoting him, "Thank you, Planned Parenthood. God bless you. God bless America. Thank you." Close quotes. Chief Counsel for the American Center for Law and Justice, Jay Sekulow, called the president's remarks outrageous. Sekulow stated, "Planned Parenthood ends the lives of over 330,000 babies every year while taking over $500 million of our tax dollars. A large number of these aborted babies have been born in African-American communities. Some have called it black genocide."
Did Mr. Obama violate the so-called separation of church and state by asking God to bless Planned Parenthood, or did he do something more sinister?
Well, Jerry, in his closing arguments, Jack McMahon, defense attorney for abortionist Kermit Gosnell, told members of the jury not to allow the graphic photo showing baby-severed spinal cords to impact their final decision in the Gosnell murder trial because, as he said, abortion is not on trial. Gosnell is on trial for killing four babies born alive and also for one count of third-degree murder in the death of patient Carnamaya Monger. The attorney tried to dismiss the brutality of it all by stating, "When you see pictures of a dead fetus with a hole, it affects you. You have to transcend that. You're here to decide whether he's a cold-blooded first-degree murderer," close quotes. The culture of death is upon us. Where it will end is anyone's guess. We have to transcend our feelings of revulsion when we see a murdered fetus. Really? New horrific discoveries in New York City, Washington, D.C., and other locations show babies being drowned in toxic liquid, some swimming in commodes after surviving an abortion. Mr. Obama did much more than support women's rights.
In the words of Proverbs 14:12, quote, "There is a way that seemeth right unto a man, but the end thereof are the ways of death," close quotes. That's today's Bible in the News report from Southwest Radio. To get a complimentary copy of the monthly publication, call 1-800-652-1144. The website address is swrc.com. Be here for our next Your Watchman on the Wall program and a Bible in the News report.